I started the sermon series last week called Disruption, and I want to share with you the genesis of that title and a little bit of an overview about why I think this is an important theme. A few years ago, I was reading through the Bible, and it just occurred to me that if you look at all the major stories in the Bible, the places where God comes, so like Abraham we talked about last week, God goes to Mary, the mother of Jesus, to Joseph, and then times when things just happen. It's maybe not God directing something to happen, but life happens. And it occurred to me that one of the ways of reading the Bible, that this is a theme you can find throughout the Bible, is that the Bible is the record of God's use of disruption to create a more vital future. Might put it this way as well, God's use of disruption to help us grow more faithful. I think if you will think about your own life, you will come to the conclusion that it was in times of distress or disruption, pain perhaps, that your faith grew most quickly and grew stronger. So today we're going to be looking at a great story out of the Old Testament that follows this theme. It's from the 16th chapter of Exodus, and we're going to read just the first part of this story. Let me set it up. Moses has been called. Moses' life has been terribly disrupted. He goes to Egypt, works with God to free the Egyptians. They have left Egypt, and they are now in the wilderness on the way to the Holy Land. But as you know, that wilderness trip finally involved 40 years of travel, and it was tough at times. And the people have started complaining. They're not starving, but they think they are. They're hungry. So they started complaining to Moses about this. And we'll pick up here the first verse of chapter 16. The whole congregation of the Israelites set out from Elim, and Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they had departed from the land of Egypt. The whole congregation of the Israelites complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. Listen to their complaint. The Israelites said to them, or we call them the Hebrews, said to them, "If only we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots and ate our fill of bread." In other words, we were slaves, but we were not hungry. We had food all the time. "For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." Then the Lord said to Moses, "I'm going to rain bread from heaven for you. And each day the people shall go out and gather enough for that day." And as the story progresses, we know it's for that day and that day only. You can't store it up. "In that way," we quoted this for you, "in that way I will test them," and here's the disruption, "whether they will follow my instruction or not." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I want to start out with a question. It's really a simple question. Are you willing to trust your life to God? Maybe I should be a bit more explicit about that. Are you willing to trust your life to God? By that I mean trust every moment and every breath of your life to God. Straightforward question, I think. Easy to understand the question. The answer might be more difficult. You can be thinking about the answer while we look at the way in which the Hebrews answered that question. If we had asked the Hebrews that question, and you can read this over and over again in the story of the Hebrews in the wilderness, their answer would have been clearly no, an explicit, resounding no. We are not willing to trust our life to God. Now, why that is interesting, because God had been so faithful to them. The story of God sending Moses, they were in bondage, they were persecuted, they were suffering, there's no doubt about it. God sent Moses to Egypt to set all of the Hebrews free. They were thrilled to be free. God showed them God's faithfulness in that act. And then as they were leaving Egypt, a famous story, most of you at least heard a little bit about this story. They're running away from Egypt, they're running away. Pharaoh decides to chase them with his soldiers and their horses, their chariots. And God parts the sea and lets the Hebrews get by, and then closes it again. God saves them again. So after the other, where God has proven God's faithfulness to the Hebrews, they still are not willing to trust God. And this is what it looked like. They were just really hungry. They weren't getting enough food to eat. They weren't starving. They weren't dying, but they were hungry. And they complained to Moses, said, take us back. And so this is a really, really famous story. We've talked about it a lot. I think it's one of those stories, if you were to remember, if you looked at the New Testament, you want to remember the Christmas story, for instance, maybe the story of the prodigal son or the Good Samaritan, certainly the story of the cross and the resurrection. When you look back at the Old Testament, this is one of those stories that you need to remember and understand in order to know what God was doing in the lives of the Hebrew people. This is what God did. He said, I'm going to disrupt the lives of these people because they do not trust me. I'm going to rain down bread every morning. They called it manna. So they'll have bread every day, but they will not be able to save it at all. I'm going to force them to learn how to trust me every single day. He more or less told the Hebrews, you can sow if you want to, but you will not reap. You can hunt if you want to, but you will never put meat on the grill. You are going to be totally dependent on me every single day for your lives, for every breath you take. Every fiber of your being, every breath you take will be dependent upon my grace. It's a remarkable and famous story. God forced them to trust him on a daily basis. Now back to our question. Are you willing to trust your life, every breath you take, to God every single day? When I was writing that story, I started getting confused a lot because I started to provide the answer that you would provide, and, you know, I wasn't sure whether that was really the right thing to do. I just started thinking about my answer to that question, and my answer is pretty similar to the Hebrews. Most of the time, I'm not willing to trust God. It's real easy, I think. If you stop and think about it, I'll just say, in my case, as long as things are going well in my life, I prefer to trust myself. As long as I have control over the most important things that are taking place in my life, I'd much rather trust myself than trust God. You know why that is? Because we like to be in control, don't we? One of the most powerful definitions of pain is that pain is any time when we're not in control. If you'll stop and think about that, that is what is painful. If you have a disease, you're not in control. If you're having trouble with a child, you're not in control. You could go right down the list of everything that causes you pain, and the common denominator in all cases will be that you're not in control. So when I'm not in pain and I'm in control, I'm always going to trust myself. I may know better. I'm a preacher. Maybe I should know better. But the truth of the matter is, I'm going to trust myself. If I can take care of my children, I trust myself to do that better than God can. If I can provide for my family and plan out what's going to take place, I do that. I tend to trust myself more than God. We're in the middle of the stewardship season. We're going to show you a wonderful video in a few minutes. This wonderful couple from Table of Grace called the Bartels, who just made the decision to let God have control of their finances. That's always been really difficult for me. I consider myself to be a generous person, but letting God actually have control of my finances, that's pretty difficult, I think. Now, we trust God. We do it all the time, but not when things are going well. We tend to trust God when we're on our knees, don't we? And you know the list, the litany of things that take place in our lives. We didn't see it coming, but all of a sudden we're on our knees. It's the diagnosis that was unexpected. It's the phone call. It's the kid who has run away or is on drugs. When we find ourselves no longer in control, that's when we go to our knees and we say, dear God, this one is up to you. That's when we tend to trust God. We have a member in our church, wonderful member. She goes to Table of Grace, and her house burned. I want to say her house burned to the ground. It really, the roof is still there, I think, for the most part. It didn't burn to the ground, but everything inside the house is gone. Every single thing. And I called and talked to her last week. It reminded me of a handful of phone calls that I've had through the years, 47 years of ministry. There's probably been, I'm guessing, 6 church members through the years in various appointments where I've been who have lost their home to fire. And it's easy if you're not there on the spot with them to say, well, you got out, nobody, and in my case, nobody's ever been hurt by the fire. But when you start walking through this with someone who's the victim of total loss in a fire, it's incredibly disorienting. She was telling me about going back in and looking for things. You know, you look for those wedding photographs. They're burned. They're gone. You look for that piece of jewelry that was special to you, or for that note that your mother sent you just a few days before she died. All of those sentimental things, so much of it that burns up, it doesn't make any difference, but there are those sentimental things that have really woven together your identity and life. And you walk into your home and it's all gone. Insurance company is helping out and she's living in a motel. She's doing fine, but she said, you know, I've heard this so many times. She said, you know, all I can do now is to just trust God. One day at a time, that's all I'm capable of doing. That's who we are as human beings, isn't it? We'd rather not be in a situation where we have to trust God. It's when we find ourselves out of control that we go to our knees and say, okay, God, you have it all. I trust you with every breath, with every moment, with everything I've got. We're going to come to the table here in a few minutes, what we call Holy Communion, or the celebration of the Holy Eucharist. I confess to you that most of my ministry, I have thought of the Eucharist as primarily a New Testament event. By that, I've thought about it as the time when we do exactly what Jesus said, when Jesus first offered the meal to his disciples, that it's a time when we look back and we remember Holy Week. We remember Jesus sharing this meal with his disciples and his followers. And for that reason, it's always been a meaningful sacrament for me, but in recent years, it's become even more meaningful because I've come to understand this meal as also being rooted in this story about the Hebrews in the wilderness, about the fact they came to that moment when the bread always came from God. So these days, Holy Communion has become ever more powerful for me because when the bread is placed into my hand, I remember the fact that it comes as a gift from God. I like to think about that phrase from the Lord's Prayer, give us this day our daily bread. And the fact that we are dependent upon God, not just for daily bread, but for everything that comes to us in life, every breath we take. You're going to be invited in a moment. It doesn't make any difference who you are, where you've been, what church you belong to, or whether you belong to church at all. In a few minutes, we'll invite you to come forward and receive the bread and the wine. And in so doing, remember that life itself is a gift from God. That every breath, every moment comes from God. A reminder that we all belong to God. Thanks be to God. Amen.